Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. Host Chris Kington Barker and Cheryl Wayland, Senior Partner of Special Initiatives and Partnerships at SAGE, who are dedicated to improving the lives of LGBTQ+ older adults, discuss the unique set of aging challenges faced by this underserved community. You're invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation between 1 and 2 p.m. We're live in the studio today, so please do call in and be part of the discussion at 805-781-3875. And now let's join Chris and her guest. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Charlie. The typical advanced care directive model assumes that a person's caregivers are their heterosexual spouse or birth children. This means that the model does not consider that many members of the LGBTQ+ community don't have traditional marriages or are more likely to be child-free and rely on chosen family members to make critical decisions. Clinical studies have shown that medical professionals are less likely to offer advanced care directives to racially minoritized populations, including LGBTQ+ and elders of color. This is just one area where LGBTQ+ elders have experienced systemic homophobia, transphobia, and racism throughout their lifetimes. My guest today, Cheryl Whalen, and I will be talking about that system and a topic of community supports for LGBTQ+ elders. Welcome, Cheryl. So good to talk with you again.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's always a pleasure to be in conversation with you.
Oh, it is with you too. You know, Cheryl, if people are listening for the first time and are hearing of SAGE for the first time, would you please introduce SAGE as an organization and just the variety of things that it covers, how long it's been around, and how it started?
Sure. Yeah, I would love to, Chris. So, you know, SAGE is a nonprofit organization serving gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender elders across the country. Our headquarters are in New York City, and SAGE was founded in 1978. And since that time, we've really led the way in advocating for policy, services, and resources that empower LGBTQ+ elders to live openly and authentically. And we also provide a number of resources and supports for caregivers, as well as the professional aging network. And, you know, at the local level in New York City and also in South Florida, we have a program called SAGE Serves. And through that program, they provide a number of resources, such as care management, friendly visitor programs. We run senior centers. So they're really meeting the needs of the local community in New York City and South Florida. And then at the national level, we have a number of programs, including our advocacy work, our partnership program, which is called SAGE Collab, where we're partnering with organizations across the country to serve LGBTQ+ older adults. And in California, we have nearly a dozen partners who are doing this work at the local level. And oftentimes, we receive calls from community members trying to connect with services. And so it's really important for us to be able to connect people back to their local community where they can receive services. We also have SAGE U, which is a new virtual program that is a virtual learning hub for LGBTQ+ older adults. It's free, and it's accessible to anyone that wants to join. So we would encourage people to check out that program. Additionally, we have the National Resource Center on LGBTQ+ aging, where we have a number of resource guides and toolkits available. We provide information and referral. We also have SAGE Care, which is our training and credentialing arm of SAGE. And we have our National Housing Initiative, where we're helping to connect people with housing resources across the country. So that's just a quick overview of some of the services and programs that we offer.
And SAGE is the largest and the oldest organization that has been providing services for LGBTQ+ nationally, correct?
Right, yes, we are. You know, we've been doing this since 1978 and, you know, have really, you know, over these years have really formed strong relationships, not only within the LGBTQ plus community, but with, you know, local organizations such as area agencies on aging and state units on aging and others across the country that are serving older adults.
How are you seeing that SAGE's work has been shifting and kind of morphing into the needs of all communities with the baby boomer population coming through with such mass? And has it made a difference?
Yeah, you know, when I first started doing this work, over 20 years ago now, actually, you know, people would, when I would go into a room and start talking about LGBTQ plus aging to a group of professionals serving older adults, they would oftentimes ask if they had LGBTQ plus elders in their community. And I think one of the big shifts that we've seen is today most aging providers know that they are serving LGBTQ plus elders in their community. And part of that is with the growth of, you know, the baby boom generation as well as Gen X, yeah, you know, who are entering, you know, I think the first Gen Xers turned 60, mm-hmm, like last year maybe, I think. So, you know, we have this growing population of older adults who openly identify as LGBTQ, and they expect to be able to be served, you know, by their aging providers, to know that they can walk into a home care company and they expect to be treated with dignity and respect, to walk into their local senior center and know that they're going to be welcomed. So I think that's the big difference today, is that we're truly out and visible and being served openly.
And yet those are still challenges, are they not?
Right, they are. You know, even though we've seen progress, we've still seen, you know, we still see discrimination. We still see stigma. And so those are challenges that, you know, we continue to advocate, you know, for LGBTQ plus non-discrimination rights and for more communities to join us in making sure that their services are welcoming to LGBTQ plus elders.
In my opening, what I was talking about was using advanced healthcare directives as an example of how things can be skewed in a way, unknowingly perhaps, where it leaves out communities. And professionals who consider themselves compassionate towards humanity can leave out communities and peoples, maybe unknowingly. How is it that people can become more aware, for instance, people who are serving elders in, say, a nursing care community can be more attentive to being respectful of all members, including LGBTQ plus? What is it that you look for if you were going in to look at a facility for friends, Cheryl, that you're looking to help be in an appropriate facility that's going to serve them? What would you check?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot in that question, Chris. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the first things that I would look for is, you know, look to the non-discrimination policies of organizations who are providing services. As LGBTQ plus people, we've long, you know, looked for those policies. Are they inclusive? You know, do they say that they will not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity? You know, that's really one of the first places to look.
So do they call that out?
Do what?
Do they call that out?
You know, over the years, we've seen more and more organizations that are inclusive.
Okay.
That have that information, you mm-hmm. know, front-facing in their non-discrimination policies.
Okay.
And so that's what we encourage people to look for. And if they don't see it, to ask, you know, are you inclusive of LGBTQ plus people?
Mm-hmm.
Have you served an LGBTQ plus older adult or caregiver? And, you know, you can learn a lot just by asking those questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how that person answers the question, you know, are they comfortable talking about serving LGBTQ plus people? That's going to be one of the first signs. We have a number of checklists that are available, you know, for people looking to find information out about programs and services. We have checklists that they can take.
And oh, you have actual checklists that people can obtain through you?
Yes, yes, through our website.
Wonderful.
And that way, you know, they kind of have a list of questions that they can go in and ask that provider. How do you provide services? Do you, you know, have you provided staff training? Mm-hmm. Are you reaching out to other community partners that serve LGBTQ plus elders? So there's just a lot that we can ask up front when we're seeking services. And, you know, I encourage people, interview the service providers. If you're needing to, you know, set up home care services for you or a loved one, interview 3, 4, 5 home care companies and ask them a set of questions that will help you assess if that place is welcoming to LGBTQ plus elders.
Thank you for that. And if somebody was trying to find those kinds of lists, would they go to SAGE? Where would they look on the website?
Yes, they could go to our website, sageusa.org, and you'll see at the top of our website the National Resource Center, mm-hmm. and from there you can find checklists and questions that you can ask of providers, and you can always contact us through email, and we can send those out to folks as well.
Cheryl, you mentioned the length of time that you've been with SAGE. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved with SAGE? Because it's been a while. Did you say 20 years?
Yeah, it's been about 20 years. You know, I started out working in advocacy for folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so that's really where I learned to be an advocate and was advocating, you know, for others and with others. And it was through that work that, you know, I also was becoming more accepting of my own self as a lesbian and knew that I wanted to give back to my community. And so that was really what started this journey for me. And when I was talking with a group of friends, you know, they kind of helped me see my purpose. And, you know, one of my friends said, you know, Cheryl, nobody is doing this work. They're not doing LGBTQ plus advocacy at the local level for elders. And most of my friends are 15 to 20 years older than me. And it was like a light bulb went off. I knew that this was where I wanted to be. And, you know, it was kind of a joke within my friend circle that because I was the youngest, that one day I would be taking care of everybody. And I thought, I'm either going to have to start a nonprofit or get a bigger house because I can't care for everyone. And I was just sharing with you, Chris, before we went on this call, that one of those dear friends just passed away this week. And I was reminded, you know, as I was reflecting back on our friendship, that about 25 years ago, she gave me a gag gift for my birthday. And it was a calendar to a funeral home. And I remember opening that calendar and thinking, she gave me a calendar to a funeral home. And then she, you know, burst out laughing and she said, well, Cheryl, you're the youngest one in our friend circle. So you need to know, you know, where our arrangements are so that when I die, you can take care of those arrangements. And, you know, it just really kind of brought this whole conversation full circle for me this week that this was my purpose. Was, you know, to support LGBTQ plus elders and my friends and one day myself.
Are you taking care of her arrangements, Cheryl?
I am not. But I did have a good conversation with her sister this morning. And, yeah, it was just a fun memory that we shared. So. But I have found myself in caregiving roles for friends and you know, within our LGBT community, largely because they didn't have children. and they didn't have close relatives there to help with their care as they aged. And so I have found myself, you know, serving as a caregiver and power of attorney. You know, currently I'm supporting a 96-year-old friend along with my wife. And, you know, she's somebody we've just really brought into our circle to help support as she ages.
Mm. I want to get back to talking about childless couples in just a moment. I'm going to take a real quick break. I'm Chris Kington-Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. My guest today is Cheryl Whalen, Senior Director of Special Initiatives and Partnerships at SAGE. And we're talking about community supports for LGBTQ plus elders offered by SAGE. You can join our discussion today at 805-781-3875. And Cheryl, you mentioned, you know, how many of your friends are childless couples or childless. And there was a time where it wasn't very easy for gay couples, gay and lesbian couples, to adopt or have surrogate children. And that it has been shifting. But for an elder generation now, there are more who are aging who don't have their own children that they can count on. Talk a little bit about... you are a young person who's in a circle of friends who are older. How important is that?
Yeah, you know, I think the importance of having multi-generational relationships, mm-hmm. I think we're just seeing that more and more focused on today. And I think a part of that is because, you know, if we only have same-aged peers,
yeah,
and as we age, that social network shrinks. And it becomes, as we like to say at SAGE, it becomes a very thin social and support network.
Mm-hmm.
And so broadening our circle of friends is so important for so many reasons. And some of that is, you know, social connection, you know, having folks that you can turn to, you know, for support as you age. Having somebody that can maybe help give you a ride to the doctor's office or take your pet to the vet. You know, those are things that, you know, we oftentimes just don't think about that as we're creating our circle of friends. And then just the companionship. You know, SAGE did a research study several years ago, and it found that, you know, LGBTQ plus elders want to be mentors to younger people.
Mm.
They want to be able to share their history, share the lessons learned. There's so much wisdom, you know, with our older adults. And so forming these multi-generational relationships can just be very powerful. And on the other end, as an older person, you know, I'm now 55, and there's so much that we can learn from younger generations. There's such a wealth of knowledge that can be shared, you know, across the generations if we just take the time to form those relationships and really be in community with one another.
Absolutely. When you're talking about organizations or community supports, what kinds of community supports are necessary within a community in order to really have the kind of support that people need as they age?
You know, there are so many needs, you know, for our older adult community. You know, we need housing support, access to healthy meals, healthcare, you know, these are all things that we depend on as we age. And not one organization can do all.
Right.
So it's really important that we build a broad network of supports. One of the things that we've been working on at SAGE through our resource center and also through SAGE Collab is this concept of creating LGBTQ plus friendly aging networks. And we're encouraging communities and organizations to think about, you know, how do they best serve LGBTQ plus elders and what is that circle of services that they need to make sure that they can meet all the needs of the LGBTQ plus elders in their community. And so it's really casting a broad net. You know, who are the services that we need at the table to ensure that people have, you know, well-rounded support systems.
How would, in a perfect environment, in a perfect community, how would those networks begin to be built and organized? What would you envision if SAGE was directing smaller communities like this community to do that?
Yeah. You know, we encourage people. Sometimes it just takes one organization to sit down and say, we want to do this. And then they start to assess the community. You know, what are the needs of the community? Where are the gaps? What services do we know are needed, but maybe my organization doesn't provide? And start to, you know, really develop a list of who needs to be at the table. And then start to invite those different organizations to the table and have a conversation. You know, we want to make sure that LGBTQ plus elders have access to all the services that are available to them. And, you know, who will you join our network? So it's really as simple as that, to sit down and start having these conversations, and then make sure that people know about the work that you're doing. We're actually working on a toolkit right now that we'll be releasing probably within the next 6 months to really help people think about how they can create those friendly aging networks at the local level.
And when you're talking about how people can access, you're also talking about there are organizations that are educated and ready to provide services in a way that is an informed way.
Right.
Okay.
And through SAGE, one of our other programs that we have is called SAGE Care, again, which is our training and credentialing program. And, you know, they work directly with aging service systems to help them make sure that staff are trained and culturally competent. And they actually have a specific program right now in California where they're doing this work, you know, to help make sure that there's training available for organizations serving older adults.
Great. And what, you know, for people that think that's not important, you know, how do you respond to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, one of the things we know about being an LGBTQ plus person is that, you know, we've oftentimes had a lifetime of discrimination and stigma. And research has shown that we've been less likely to seek supportive services because of those experiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think about healthcare and some of the services that we need as we age. These are some of the most vulnerable services. Think about going to the doctor or having a home care, you know, a home aid come in to help you with bathing and personal care. It's a very vulnerable time to be receiving these services. And, you know, if we fear the person who's providing those services, thinking that we may be mistreated or experience abuse and neglect, then we're going to be less likely to seek services. So it's really important that people know that when they're reaching out for these services, that the people providing them are culturally competent and are there, you know, with their best interest at mind, and will treat them with dignity and respect.
Without that knowledge and without having that, is there a high tendency for people not to seek services at all?
Yeah, that's what we found early on in research, is that, you know, people weren't seeking services because of that fear. You know, if I ask somebody into my home, I might be mistreated. Therefore, I'm just not going to reach out for help. And, you know, when that happens, and if a person's not receiving the services they need, then they can be at greater risk for falls, you know, for other chronic illnesses that may be coming up. And by the time they seek help, they may need to move, you know, from their home to maybe a skilled nursing community because their health has deteriorated. So it's, you know, it's so important that we have culturally competent services that can meet the needs of people where they're at, and just to make sure that, that people have access to quality care.
How important is it that that family members who are, you know, family members of members who are LGBTQ plus community have advocacy from other family to support them, to assist them through this?
Yeah, you know, our hope is that, you know, we can turn to our families during that time of need, but we know that's not always the case.
Right.
You know, we do encourage, you know, families to educate themselves. You know, if they have questions about how to best support their LGBTQ loved one, you know, to reach out to organizations like SAGE or PFLAG, you know, so that they can be a better ally mm-hmm. for their LGBTQ plus older adult. And so it's, you know, it's just really important that families and our families of choice, you know, are there to support us and understand what our needs are. And I think that's why planning documents are so important. We kind of started to talk about this earlier in the call, but, mm-hmm. you know, planning and as an LGBTQ plus person to make sure that our needs and our desires are in writing and that the folks that we're entrusting with those needs, that they understand, you know, what they are so that they can best support us.
And when we're making those decisions, to make those decisions ahead of time, way in advance,
right.
Correct?
Right.
Is there a reluctance to do that? Or is it just a situation that people think they've got more time than they've got?
You know, I think in general, there can be a reluctance to complete that paperwork. You know, I don't think it's a conversation that comes easy for folks. Mm-hmm. And when we think about advanced planning, it's, you know, it's preparing for a time when maybe our health is declining, maybe there's been an accident or, you know, something has happened that's changing our life course. And so those aren't easy conversations. But I oftentimes say it's never too early to start planning, but it can be too late. And if we've not taken the time to write our wishes down and to do the legal work that needs to be done, you know, with health care directives and powers of attorney for finances, then your wishes may not be followed. And it's only through that planning can we help to ensure that our wishes are followed.
We're going to take a break, a brief break here, and we're going to come back with more of talking with Cheryl about planning and aging. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Now let's return to Chris Kington-Barker and her guest.
I'm talking today with Cheryl Whalen, Senior Director of Special Initiatives and Partnerships at SAGE, the country's oldest national organization dedicated to improving the lives of the LGBTQ plus older adults in the country. We're talking about community supports for LGBTQ plus elders offered by SAGE. You can join our discussion today and ask questions of Cheryl if you like, 805-781-3875. Cheryl, we were talking about advanced care directives. And in advanced care directives, when you're naming someone that you want to be your spokesperson, that you want to have the ability to direct your care when you can no longer direct your care, you can name anybody. Is that correct?
Yes, you can name anybody. And I think that's what's so important is, you know, if you know that you want a specific person making those decisions, then it's key to complete the paperwork. Because if you don't, then, you know, it reverts back to the legal system. And, you know, it's going to be your next of kin, your next blood relative, who you may or may not have a good relationship with. And so it's just so important to make sure that you have this information documented so the person that's closest to you and who can best make those decisions is the one that's doing that for you.
And talk a little bit about for an individual who is transgender. How that may be different for them.
One of the concerns that we've heard for a person who has maybe transitioned and identifies as transgender is, you know, if they have an estranged relationship with their family and haven't completed the paperwork, then their family may step in at times when that person can no longer speak for themselves or make decisions and, you know, could make decisions that don't support that person to continue to live their authentic life.
Right.
We've also, you know, seen this as especially at a time of death, because even if a person has completed their power of attorney for health care and finances, those end at death. And so it's important that you have, what in some states we call a rites of sepulcher, which, you know, that's the person that's going to make decisions at your time of death. You know, what your obituary is going to say, you know, how you're going to be represented if you have, you know, a funeral. Are they going to use, you know, the name that you want people to use in your obituary or on a tombstone? So those are all things that are just so important that we oftentimes don't think about. And so SAGE has resources through our National Resource Center that can help people, you know, think about who's the best person to name. What's the paperwork that I need to complete? Just work through those questions that people have.
There's been a long history of resiliency in the LGBTQ plus community, especially for elders who've gone through periods that being out was not okay, or if they were out, there was a lot that they took on to be out. And even today, you know, depending on the circumstances you're living in, how do allies come in to support? How can they support the LGBTQ plus communities, and how do they show up in ways that are appropriate and effective?
You know, I think one of the most important things is to ask. Ask if you're an ally and you have an LGBTQ plus family member, you know, ask them, you know, how can I be supportive? Is there something you need from me? Oftentimes it's that distant family member who is oftentimes the most supportive, but maybe we just haven't been in community with one another. And so reaching out to your LGBTQ plus loved ones is just really important to make sure that they know that you're there for them. You know, from an organizational standpoint, again, you know, within June was Pride Month, and we oftentimes see a number of organizations that, you know, they'll change the logo on, you know, their social media account to a rainbow, and, you know, that's a sign that they're an ally. And just as quick as we see those rainbows appear on social media, they go away.
Mm-hmm.
So for organizations to be a true ally, you know, we show up every day, every month. And so reach out to your LGBTQ plus community organizations and ask them, you know, how can we stand in community with you? Not just in June, but 12 months out of the year. You know, what are the supports that you need that we might be able to help with? And so I think it really just starts with asking, how can we be there?
Well, I think that gets back to what you were talking about of building community so that there are resources available. And it's not, this is an LGBTQ resource, but this is a resource that is inclusive of all.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, so many times, and the other reason that that's so important, Chris, is as a national organization, when we receive a call, you know, from somebody in rural California that's looking for services, you know, we want to be able to identify those services in the community that can best support them.
Mm-hmm.
And more than likely, there's not an LGBTQ plus community center. And so, you know, maybe it is a senior center that can be there to support them, or, you know, a religious community that's affirming, or a home care company that's affirming. So we want to be able to identify those places where, you know, people can receive the services that they need. And that's why these types of networks are so important.
I asked you before we were coming in, you know, in paperwork, just so I had a sense of talking today. The question, what are the most common misconceptions about our topic? And your answer was?
Oh, Chris, I can't remember what I wrote.
You had written service organizations. We don't discriminate because we treat everyone the same. Can you talk about how that just doesn't resonate?
Yeah, I think that was, you know, one of the things, again, that I oftentimes heard, especially when I first started out in this work. You know, people would say, you know, well, we don't discriminate because we treat everyone the same. Well, we aren't all the same, you know, regardless of whether you're, you know, part of the LGBTQ community or not. You know, we're all different. We all have specific needs and concerns. And so it's really important that, you know, especially as service organizations, that we take a step back and say, okay, how are we centering the person, the individual? What are their needs? What are their wants? How do we best serve them from a place of person-centered, you know, care? So I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is that, you know, we can say we don't discriminate because we treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
Somebody's
yeah.
going to be left out.
Yeah.
If we do that.
Yeah. When we have situations where we're looking for a way to find more situations. God, my mind just went blank on my question here. I don't have that happen very often. where can we find that people are more inclusive of LGBTQ elders in the community? Where do they feel safer?
You know, I think there are a number of resources that are available. You know, SAGE has a list of organizations that have completed cultural competency training through our SAGE Care program. And then at the local level, you know, the internet is a wonderful thing today.
So if simply, people can, you know, doing access a Google, it, yeah.
Right, if you can access it, that's right. You know, doing a Google search for LGBTQ welcoming organizations, oftentimes will turn up the agencies and, you know, providers in your community that are providing LGBTQ welcoming services. So we just encourage people, you know, to reach out and also talk with your friends and your networks. Have they received quality care someplace? And, you know, word of mouth can be a powerful thing to help people find community.
When we're planning for our aging selves, you've talked about two things in the step for that. One is planning a finance, right? So that's always there. And then the Healthcare Advance Directive, we talked about that. What are some other steps?
You know, I think it's important to also revisit those. Those
if
aren't
you've already
just one
done
and
it.
Done.
Yeah.
Right. You know, if you completed your healthcare directive 10 years ago, you may want to go back and revisit that.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we find that the person we initially named to serve as our healthcare power attorney, you know, maybe they're also now having health problems and may not be the best person to support you as you age. So it's always important to go back and revisit those documents.
Or you may not still be married to them.
Right.
In a relationship.
Life changes, right? Yeah. I also think it's important, you know, there's the documents, but then there's also just taking that time to reflect. You know, where might I want to live one day if, you know, I need support? You know, start to examine the opportunities, you know, that you have at the community level. Is there a retirement community that maybe you've thought about moving to? Start doing your homework now so that, you know, should something happen and you need those services, that you've, you know, identified those places that may be a place for you to live.
I have friends who've started to think about that and then come up with, well, maybe we should all create a community to live in together. You know,
the
idea of going to a senior community doesn't appeal to them for a number of reasons. It may be that they're lesbian couples and that doesn't feel good to them, and they want to get together with all lesbian couples or lesbian women. Or, you know, they want to as friends. Are more people looking at those kinds of situations?
You know, I think there's a, yes, I think so. There's a program, you know, there's a national home sharing program where you know, the number of, you know, older adults who have, you know, maybe the children have left home or, you know, other circumstances have happened and they have room in their home. And maybe, you know, by asking someone else to move in and share rent, that enables them to stay independent, you know, in their home. So there's home sharing programs. There's, you know, of course, the Golden Girl model, which I think that's what comes to mind for a lot of folks.
Right.
You know, we buy a big 5-6-bedroom home, and we can all move in together.
Right.
So those are all, you know, options that are out there. We also have seen, you know, folks that maybe they own a small plot of land, and they can invite their friends to come and build a tiny home.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing all sorts of different arrangements that are happening.
We do have a home share program here in San Luis Obispo County, and I believe also in Santa Barbara County there are as well. And, you know, those are programs where people do share their place. And to be able to do that with intergeneration, you know, is another option too, so that you've got someone younger who is there that can be helpful and not necessarily a burden on the younger person either.
Right.
Also, it's wonderful to have people of different ages to share the wisdom that each age brings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife and I did that, you know, many years ago and didn't even think about it, but it was home sharing. We invited a younger friend who was in college and needed a place to stay. And we had an extra room and we could provide that, you know, for her. And so there's a lot of arrangements like that where, you know, maybe it's a reduced rent to help with yard work or to help with groceries. You know, just a number of ways that when we think outside the box, that we can, you know, create a stronger sense of community and support for folks that really helps them to age in place.
How is the pressure in the climate today? How is that affecting SAGE and the work that your organization is doing for the LGBTQ plus community? I mean, you are a nonprofit. You have funding that is important to you. Has that had an impact on you?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, for many nonprofits today, this has been a challenging time where maybe the opportunities for funding that were once there, you know, have shifted because of political climates or shifting, you know, needs of communities. You know, I would also say that, again, it's that resiliency. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen partnerships strengthen, you know, through this time. We've seen organizations that maybe, you know, paused training initiatives to come back and say, okay, we're here. We want to be at the table again. We're ready to, you know, start doing training again to make sure we're serving our communities. You know, we're seeing individual donors, you know, step up and say we want to continue to support, you know, the mission of SAGE and LGBTQ plus older adults. So I think with the challenges, there's also that resilience and, you know, that call to continue to support organizations like SAGE that are doing such important work.
So for folks who had a period of time where it was so frightening or just so unwelcomed in some communities to be from the LGBTQ plus community, and then to have that become less invasive, less frightening, and then to go to it being more restricted again for the elder community, has it become more scary for them again?
You know, I think it's a time when many are feeling, you know, concern again. Is this a safe place for me to be out?
Yeah.
And, you know, there, of course, there's not a blanket answer for this, but,
no,
you know, I think
sure
with all of us, you know, it's important that there's always that level of self-protection, and it's okay for every person to say, you know, is this a place where I feel comfortable being out?
Yeah.
And if you don't, it's okay. You don't have to come out.
Yeah.
And so I think that's important. And also, I think this goes back to the service organizations. If you're an agency that's providing services to people, you know, to know that you may be serving LGBTQ plus elders today who do not feel comfortable being out.
Mm-hmm.
And you may be the only person in that organization who a person feels comfortable sharing that they are LGBTQ. So if someone does come out to you, to hold that in confidence, you know, ask them, Is this okay to share with, you know, someone else that may need to know this information to best serve them? So I think it's really important that we just remember to meet people where they're at. You know, not everybody's going to feel comfortable being out, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think that's a really extremely important point. And I think for some young folks who didn't have the kind of restrictions in being able to come out to announce that they were out, it's more important for all of us to understand that privacy and confidentiality is really important for everybody.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and it's not secrecy. There's a difference. There's a big difference.
Right.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest challenges that you face in the work that you do right now?
Oh, you know, that's a big question, Chris. I think it's just continuing to, find the partners at the local level that, want to really be in community and serve LGBTQ plus elders. Our Sage Collab partner program that I talked about early on, it's a growing network of agencies. And, this is a national program, and we have 125 partner organizations that are in collaboration with Sage in 40 states. How do we get to the other 10 states?
Yeah.
And many of these states are more conservative areas. And so, finding those organizations that want to be open and affirming to LGBTQ plus elders across the country is still a challenge. And, so if people listening today know of somebody in one of the states that we don't have a Sage Collab partner that wants to be open and affirming to LGBTQ plus elders, we'd love to learn about them so that we can help connect them.
I ran into you when you were at the Society for Aging, when you were at their conference, and saw a lot of the work that Sage was presenting and doing, and you all did just a tremendous job. And the response from the different organizations that came from all over the nation was really pretty astounding, that they were getting it. They were hearing you. They were curious. And we're beginning to look at, how does this apply to me? I mean, you've been doing some incredible work.
Yeah, and I think that's why I kind of paused when you asked the question about what's most challenging.
Yeah.
Because our organization, I think, is so focused and, really resilient in continuing to build these relationships and continuing to be, at the table, that I don't always see it as a challenge, but I see it as an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are continuing to step up and show up, those are the groups that we want to continue to build these strong relationships with, because they get it and they're here for the right reasons. And so I think it's an opportunity to really continue to lean into those relationships.
Do you think in terms of some of the providers, for instance, I've seen you reach out to providers for healthcare, and in providers for healthcare, do you think that some of the lacking was just because they were unaware?
Yeah, I think sometimes, especially as I spoke early on, because so many people weren't out. If you didn't think you were serving LGBTQ plus elders, then it wasn't something people thought about.
Yeah.
And so as we've seen more people, come out to, share about their relationships, then it really opens that door for learning and understanding. And when those doors open, then it creates that opportunity to really build the community that we need.
Yeah, yeah. If it hasn't been a challenge, what are some of the opportunities that you look forward to?
Yeah, I think continuing to have conversations like this to continue to build these relationships, it's really an exciting time. At Sage, as we have new leadership, we have a new CEO that just started. We're, you know, looking at a new strategic plan. So it's just really an exciting time to think about what the future holds. And, you know, I think we come out stronger at the end of times like this. And so I just continue to have hope, you know, for what the future holds and the communities and organizations that, you know, truly want to be in partnership with SAGE.
And if organizations here in the community wanted to learn more about SAGE and connect with you, tell me again what the website is.
Yeah, our website is sageusa.org.
Okay. And you do have an office for SAGE in California?
We don't have an office, but we have, you know, several partner organizations across California, and so when somebody reaches out to us at SAGE for services in California, the first thing we're going to do is look to those partner organizations and see if there's somebody that we can connect you with at the local level.
And Cheryl, what you know, I want to give you just a minute to kind of wrap up and say whatever we haven't talked about, something that you want to make sure you get expressed.
Yeah, you know, I just continue to appreciate, you know, the support that we've seen and, you know, just encourage the callers today to, you know, reach out. If you know that there's an LGBTQ plus older adult in your family, in your community, you know, reach out to them and just simply ask, is there something that we can do to support you? You know, we're here for you as your neighbor, as your friend, as your family member. And I think it's those types of open conversations that can help us build community.
And maybe think of every month as Pride Month.
Yes, every month is Pride Month.
I appreciate you, Cheryl. I want to thank my guest for today's show, Cheryl Whalen, Senior Director of Special Initiatives and Partnerships at SAGE, the country's oldest national organization dedicated to improving the lives of the LGBTQ plus older adults. Next week, join host Lata Morty and guests for a discussion about fighting back. Santa Maria Valley's Navigation Center for Youth, opening in August to address high-risk behaviors among youth. I'm Chris Kington-Barker for Center Coast Voices. Thank you for joining me today, and thank you for being a KCBX listener.